This summer, discover American Giant's timeless, high-quality clothing made right here in the USA. Every piece is designed for quality and style that's built to last. From vintage-style tees to tough tank tops, breathable polos to lightweight sweatshirts, you can find your perfect fit. Celebrate American craftsmanship and support local communities with every stitch. Go to American-Giant.com and use promo code STAPLE20 for 20% off your first order.
Top of the table, that's exciting. Bottom of the table, that's exciting. Like, that's the sort of football that you want to be. And these are the pressure games that in 15, 20 years' time, I will look back on and I will remember these are the important matches for me, not the middle of the table teams.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
Off the ball. This is News Talk.
Let's talk Super Bowl. Hollywood is happy. LA Rams 23, Cincinnati Bengals 20. The final score, winning touchdown, came with a minute and 25 seconds left on the clock. Sean McVay, at 36 years old and 20 days, becomes the youngest Super Bowl coach in history. Super Bowl winning coach, obviously, in history. And I think we had a halftime show, which is going to be remembered as well. Tara Sullivan of the Boston Globe is with us. Good evening, Tara.
Hello, how you doing?
Very well. So LA Rams, were they deserving winners, would you say?
Oh, I would say so, yeah. I mean, I thought it was a very entertaining game. So one of those where there's been some controversy, I'm sure you're aware, you know, of some of the calls late in the game going against the Bengals, and maybe that would lead people to question the fairness. But there also were a few that went the other way that benefited the Bengals. So in the end, I would say, yes, a deserving winner.
We had Mike Carlson on our morning show, and he was saying it was a messy kind of a game, in some respects defined by mistakes every bit as much as brilliance.
Well, you know, I think that's true of any football game, I'll be honest with you. There's, you know, because the mistakes, the turnovers, things like that are generally, you know, that important, and they lead to either, you know, taking points off the board or putting points on the board for the opponent. So, you know, there were some mistakes, not only by the players, but by officials, but there also were some great plays. And I think, you know, Matt Stafford as the quarterback of LA and his backstory, you know, really toiling for so long in anonymity in Detroit and then going to the Rams really for this express purpose and being able to deliver as he did in that with that final drive. I think that to me makes it feel, you know, well played and really deserving in to his credit.
So there are various aspects to American sports which are so alien to us. One of the chief ones being franchises say goodbye to a city and we're out of here. And so the Rams have spent 20 years away and then 6 years ago they came back home. What does that do to the local fan base? I mean, are there a bunch of very upset people in LA saying you can't just arrive back after 20 years and expect us to be on board with that? Or is it kind of taken as a, hey, look, we understand, that's just how things work?
Well, LA is an interesting case in point because sometimes they're known for having fervent fan bases, but most times not. You know, LA is Hollywood, and so it feels like, you know, the Rams even struggle to some degree to have a home field advantage, you know, that even when they hosted San Francisco, you know, would they even feel the home field advantage? So LA sometimes feels a little different, but it's interesting that you kind of put it toward the LA fan and them coming back, because really it's the St. Louis fan, I think, that's truly upset today in seeing the Rams win, because they're the ones who feel wronged that they took the Rams in, gave them a stadium, had them for a while, and then they just up and left again. So there is no love lost for the owner of the Rams, who I know your football fans are well aware of, Stan Kroenke. So, you know, it's kind of both sides carry some, you know, frustration. And you're right, it is a, you know, a weird kind of a setup that's unique to American sports, because it has happened in many cities. Not only, it just happens that this one is a Super Bowl winning team.
Yes. And when you say St. Louis gave them a stadium, I suspect you do mean that quite literally. Oftentimes these stadiums are demanded by the franchise, as in, well, you pay for the stadium and we'll grace you with our presence.
Absolutely. And that's a big element of why these Rams are back in LA, is they played in this incredible new SoFi Stadium, which the NFL helped them secure to be able to move back. They actually share it with the LA Chargers, as I'm sure you know. But I didn't go to the Super Bowl. I watched it like you guys, but I was at that stadium earlier this season for a Patriots game there. And it's you know, it is incredible. It's a marvel of modern technology and stadium building, but they are absolutely used as recruiting ploys, and they often cause great upset in the host cities, because if they end up taxpayer funded, which they very often are, you know, you can imagine the non-sports fan is usually not as interested in having these things built in their areas. So the places where it's maybe been built by the ownership money, there might be a little bit less resentment, but the stadium issue is a very ongoing and large one among American sports fans.
And I'm sure they have, or maybe they haven't. Has St. Louis replaced the Rams?
No.
They are bereft. They got nobody.
St. Louis does not have football at the moment.
Okay. American football. So they just...
That's what happened. Like, there are famous ones you could look through. The Cleveland Browns leaving in the dead of night. The Baltimore Colts. I mean, the Baltimore Ravens were another... Like, there's just been... And now you have it with the Raiders, right? They've ping-ponged between Oakland, LA, now Las Vegas, where they're starting up. So it's just... Yeah, it's just an... Like you say, it's an interesting sort of very American problem.
Mm. So do people in St. Louis just hate watch the LA Rams? That's their main interest in
NFL. Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. There's so many interesting characters and storylines around the Super Bowl. Let's start with Sean McVay, who, disgustingly for the rest of us, at the age of 36 and 20 days, is now the youngest NFL Super Bowl winning coach in history. So he arrived 6 years ago. Can you chart the job that he's done here, how impressive this guy is? What's his secret sauce?
Yeah, I think, he has this ridiculous memory. I don't know if you've ever seen some of the video clips of him. You know, you could ask him about a game that he coached, you know, 8 years ago, and he can describe a play to you from the third quarter, like actually describe, you know, the specifics of the play. So clearly he must have some kind of photographic or some kind of really valuable memory. So when it comes to, I think, designing plays and things like that, that certainly helps him. The most interesting part to me, you know, is that he reached a Super Bowl once before 3 years ago and lost it, and was pretty open about, blaming himself for the mistakes that he made and getting out coached in that game, which granted was against Bill Belichick, who's the game's best coach ever. But still, I think it's a real credit to him that he really seemed to learn from that experience and didn't have the sense of maybe panic or nervousness that characterized their play a few years ago. So in that regard, I think he's going to be around for a while, at least his coaching ability. I don't know about the roster of the Rams. They really went all in money-wise and everything to put this particular team together. So I don't think they're kind of in that position to become a dynasty in any way. But we'll see. I mean, I wouldn't put anything past McVay now.
Well, on McVay staying around forever, so at 36 years of age, that would have been my presumption. And yet I was watching the morning football show over in the States this morning, and one of the panelists is very good friends with McVay and passed up on the opportunity to go to the team party afterwards, but, you know, showed a screenshot of them having a FaceTime chat. But he was saying, don't be surprised if McVay walks away or considers walking away. And I know The Athletic, I think, wrote a piece suggesting the same, that maybe Sean McVay might just head off into the sunset here as a bit of a legend and earn multiples of millions sitting in a TV studio. That would be astonishing.
It would be. Wow, it would be a huge story if that happened, because, you just don't see that happen very often. You know, they're all more often talking about legacy and wanting to stick with it. But it is an interesting distinction with some of these younger coaches that we're seeing in the United States in football, that maybe they're not only all about football. Like, the greatness of a Belichick, right, is just he's a football guy through and through, and he's all these different stops and different jobs, and he just loves football. He's going to be 70 years old and no desire seemingly to stop. Whereas some of these younger guys, maybe it is an issue of, you know, I don't want to be defined. I don't want to have my entire life built around football. It is an incredibly demanding position, as it is with any professional sport. But the, you know, American football is a very different kind of work week, because you have to do a very specific game plan every week for your opponent. Like, that's different than even, you know, the four or five major sport, whatever, all our major sports in America. Like, you know, once you have your baseball team ready to play, they're pretty much ready to play no matter who's on the other side. They might get, you know, a scouting report about a specific pitcher, but it's not anything like you have to do for football. So that would be a hell of a story, and I'm sure he'd be great on TV, but I'll believe it when I see it, because it's just not something we're accustomed to seeing.
No, I'd be amazed. As an aside, I mean, I guess one of the reasons that story is even potentially possibility is just how much these guys get paid on American TV. I appreciate America's a big country and it's a big audience and there's a lot of money swirling around. But is it commented upon over there, the staggering sums that the co-commentators are getting? Like, we're talking, I mean, you can hit me with some figures, I'm sure, but I mean, well over 10 million is like, anything beneath that's chump money.
Yeah, the Tony Romos and the guys that really make that transition. I mean, I understand what you're saying, because from an outside view, it just seems absurd on its face, right?
Sorry to interrupt. Romo's on $17 million a year.
Yeah, so it seems crazy. But I guess my usual answer is, like, the money is there in the game. So it's got to go somewhere. Like, the amount of money that the NFL generates, it never seems to slow down. Like, it just, even as they went through issues with Colin Kaepernick or, you know, backlash and social justice initiatives, whatever it might be, they're being sued by one of their own coaches now over racial discrimination and hiring, and nothing seems to ever really stop the juggernaut. Yeah. So the money is there. It's kind of the same way I feel about the players. Like, they should more than get their fair share. And so I, you know, the media being another element of it, I can assure you I'm not in that category, but I get what you're saying, that these former coaches and former players that have shown an ability to explain the game. Listen, we talked in a conversation about John Madden. Like, John Madden really changed that, making that such a coveted job to be able to explain the game for the layperson in a way that they can feel like, you know, oh, I can talk like a coach now, you know, like that they can really understand the game. So, you know, I guess that's my usual answer is, if the money's there, why not let the media have part of it too?
Odell Beckham Jr. we should talk about. So people will remember his rookie season because he had some touchdowns which went viral, and there's a one-handed catch, and wow, superstar's born, and he's called Beckham. That's kind of a weird thing, and, you know, all this stuff. And here we are, I would say, midway through the season, and the perception of Odell Beckham Jr. would be, correct me if I'm wrong, but style over substance never quite delivered. And last night, injury in the second quarter notwithstanding, is a night of redemption for him?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I don't know if his reputation was as much style over substance, because I do think there was always belief in the substance of Odell Beckham's talent, you know, his skill set, his talent, even in around injury and that. Like, I don't think it was style over substance as much as it was like locker room killer, you know, like team, like he had gained a reputation as too much of a distraction. And the Giants, you know, to their discredit, I think couldn't really figure out how to keep him sort of in the program. And then their general manager at the time kind of made it sound like he was the culture problem. And that certainly followed him to Cleveland, and then to kind of, you know, ask his way out of there as well. But what I will say in defense of Beckham, as somebody who I covered for years when I was working around the Giants, really his frustrations, yes, when he was young, it was immaturity, and he did really, you know, just, he did things that did not help his reputation, whether it was, you know, pretending to pee like a dog in the end zone as a celebration, or kicking net on the sideline because he was frustrated, punching a hole in the wall after a playoff loss in Green Bay. Like, that stuff is hard to excuse, but it was very, very much tied to just frustration with not winning.
Right.
And I think that's really what motivated Odell all along, was to find a situation where he could win. And why I think it was redemptive for him last night is that, had he not gotten hurt, I mean, he was on track for, you know, 100 plus receiving yards. I mean, I even turned to people that I was watching the game with, like, when he started out that well, I thought, like, this is classic Odell. Like, when he gets going well, that momentum, he's going to be unstoppable. And really, it was only because of the injury that he wasn't. So I think what we saw in the post game with his, you know, overwhelmed by emotion, you know, I thought that was really authentic from him, because winning is really, that is what really motivated him, even as he took the missteps along the way.
Yes, it was really notable. As soon as he went off, Matthew Stafford was looking around, and really Cooper Kupp was about his only option, and he didn't have many others. And you know, it was those two which drove things home. We should mention the Bengals as well. Joe Burrow's been kind of a superstar this year, and how he would go was obviously a big factor in last night. He arrived looking very sharp, saw the outfit. I think he's a confident young man, we can safely say that. He was sacked a Super Bowl record 7 times, but still, Tara, I'm seeing the consensus seems to be he did okay, played pretty well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I don't think anybody thinks today that Burrow is the reason they lost, even as you know, I think a lot of people thought the minute he got the ball in those final, whatever it was, minute and a half, you know, that he could, he absolutely had the ability to drive them for a game tying field goal, at least, if not a touchdown. But that poor, you know, the offensive line just couldn't protect him. And you saw Aaron Donald, you know, was like a one man wrecking crew and yeah. really could have, should have, you know, been the MVP, maybe, I don't know, of the game. Yeah, Burrow is a star already. And the, you know, it feels to me like this guy is the limit. It reminds me a lot of Dan Marino, you know, one of the most famous American quarterbacks who got Miami to a Super Bowl in his second year and unfortunately never got back despite a Hall of Fame career. So I do hope that the Bengals can kind of find the pieces so that this wasn't a one-off, because I think Burrow is great for the league and I think he's a lot of fun, and the connection he has with Ja'Marr Chase, his young receiver, former college teammate, like, to me, that's a very exciting ground level feel for something that could be around for a while, and particularly with a franchise that was a doormat for so long that it makes it kind of fun if they're good.
Okay. Halftime show will be remembered. I think that's fair to say. So we had Dr. Dre, we had Snoop Dogg, Eminem, Mary J. Blige, Kendrick Lamar, and 50 Cent. Thought personally doing quite well to make it into that group, but 50 Cent was in there as well. I was very funny on Twitter because the pictures being painted from, you know, around America and beyond were children of a certain age, open mouthed, looking at their parents in their late 30s, early 40s, suddenly bursting into word perfect hip hop. And, you know, I think the parents also realizing, oh my God, we're so old. So yeah. There was that, which was kind of funny. But Eminem took the knee, and the NFL have been at pains to come out and deny that they told him not to do that. And they're stating that they saw him do that in rehearsals all week. And this was very much fine with us.
I'm not sure I believe that part. I would have no problem believing that the NFL asked him not to do it, and he did it anyway. I think it was really a cool cultural moment. Like you said, there were plenty of jokes, you know, was it the millennials or the Gen Xers? You know, we're obsessed in this country with naming everything, you know? So, you know, who really vibed the most with that halftime show. And it was a very cool opportunity to highlight and showcase, you know, a genre of music that is enormously popular, but just kind of hadn't been in that sort of mainstream spotlight of something like a Super Bowl halftime. So I thought that was great to me to celebrate what is, you know, what is known as emblematic of Black culture in this country is far more powerful than writing, you know, end racism in the end zone or something. So for me, I think it had a lot of resonance for people, and it was, you know, largely well received.
Yeah, because Eminem, I think. Oh, sorry, Tara, you dropped out briefly. Sorry, continue.
Yeah, no, I can't remember. I kind of got on my tangent about the relevancy and what was the other point we were making about the halftime show.
Well, we were wondering if the NFL were thrilled to see Eminem, who has previously embraced Colin Kaepernick in his lyrics and previous songs. Yeah. We were wondering how thrilled they were about that on the most watched moment of the season in some respects.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they weren't thrilled, but at the same time, they can't be surprised. Like, they know they're in the crosshairs of a cultural conversation. So, you know, like I said to you, I have no problem believing that they said, please don't do it. But I have no problem believing that they were crossing their fingers behind their backs when they said, please don't do it. Because I just think they really, the NFL is the ultimate example of there's no such thing as bad publicity. Because like we talked about, there's nothing that seems to, you know, stem or curtail their popularity regardless. So even when they're caught in the middle of these, you know, whatever it might be, controversial moments, it just never really affects their popularity. So in the long run, I don't think they'll have any issue with it.
No, I suspect you're right. Tara Sullivan of the Boston Globe. Thanks so much, Tara.
Thank you. On to whatever's next. 100, whatever, months before we're back to football.
Yeah, we'll find something. Thanks, Emil.
All right, take care.
Mike Tirico here with some of the 2024 Team USA athletes. What's your message for the team of tomorrow?
To young athletes, never forget why you started doing it in the first place. You have to pursue something that you're passionate about.
Win, lose, or draw, I'm always going to be the one having a smile on my face.
Finding joy in why you do it keeps you doing it.
Be authentic, be you, and have fun.
Joy is powering Team USA during the Olympic and Paralympic Games. Comcast is proud to be bringing that inspiration home for the team of tomorrow.